Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Santa H., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, August 17, 2015. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 155, beginning with paragraph number 2, When Our Friend Related. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Ann M., the 12 Traditions, Lisa H., and reading the literature today are Terry H., Chelsea H., and Penny C. The share ID for Sunday, August 16th, our special edition meeting by speaker panel discussion, Chapter 9, The Family Afterwards, is 7929. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Ann M. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Ann. Ann M., star one.
Yes, thank you. This is Ann M. from Minnesota. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And thank you for this opportunity of service.
Thank you, Ann M. I will now ask Lisa H. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Lisa H., grateful, newly recovered, compulsive overeater from West Tennessee. The 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual or primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Lisa H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book means to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, we ask everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 155. Paragraph 2, beginning with When Our Friend Related, through two paragraphs, ending with Might Give Him Master. The first paragraph for content only, and comments will be focused on the second paragraph. I will now ask Terry H. to begin reading.
Good morning, Santos. Good morning, Vision View. My name is Terry H., a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. When our friend related his experience, the man agreed that no amount of willpower he might muster could stop his drinking for long. A spiritual experience, he conceded, was absolutely necessary, but the price seemed high upon the basis suggested. He told how he lived in constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. He had, of course, the familiar alcoholic obsession that few knew of his drinking. Why, he argued, should he lose the remainder of his business, only to bring still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? He would do anything, he said, but that. Being intrigued, however, he invited our friend to his home. Sometime later, and just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. For him, this was a spree that ended all sprees. He saw that he would have to face his problem squarely, that God might give him mastery. And I can totally identify him with this paragraph with Bob. You know, the second paragraph, it says, you know, being intrigued. I remember coming into program, and the first time I was very intrigued because, you know, it was all about, you know, it was all about losing the weight, you know, and I wanted to know how that was going to happen. And I got excited, and I was curious and interested and very attracted to the program because I saw people losing weight. And then he says, however, he invited our friend to his home. So, you know, we speak the same language. You know, and, you know, page 180 on Bob's nightmare, which is Bob's story, you know, it says the far more importance was the fact that he was the first living human with whom I'd ever talked. He knew what he was talking about in regards to alcoholism from his actual experience. In other words, he talked my language. So I was very interested because, you know, I was identifying and we did talk the same language. But what happened as Bob, you know, the thought, it says sometimes later, just as he thought, he was getting control of the liquor situation, and that's my story because I thought, and I always say I thought it, I did it, not good. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, I just put the food down and, you know, no step work. And what happened was, you know, I went on that roaring bender just as Bob did. And I'm so grateful for that roaring bender because, you know, each bender got me to the end of my spree. And, you know, I always, you know, for Bob, you know, for him, he said this was the spree that ended all sprees. And I always say, you know, you hit bottom and you stop digging. And for me, that was my truth, that I just had to hand over the shovel to a power greater than myself to continue this journey. And in order for me to continue, you know, living one day at a time in recovery, and that was the other thing, because it was so much more than putting down the food. And I had to ask myself, you know, is my abstinence based on spirit, or is it, you know, or is it just based on abstinence? And if it's based on abstinence, you know, I will believe that I don't need to go to any lengths. And you know, here comes the sprees. The sprees will come from the ease and comfort of, you know, taking that first bite. But if it's based on spirit, I'm going to need power. And so, you know, with this power, I get to lean into it on a daily basis. So my question, you know, that I have to ask myself each day, am I moving towards power or am I moving away from it? And, you know, because I need that power, because it's always about, you know, am I powerless, you know, over my disease today? And, you know, through the fellowship, I get to, you know, identify in and, it's so much more than that, you know, through recovery, you know, through the fellowship, I identify, and through the steps I recover, and, you know, just going to meetings, you know, I can feel better, but working the steps, I get better, and with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Santa.
Thank you, Terry H. A gentle reminder to please state the initial of your last name. Now, who would like to comment on that last paragraph?
Paula D.
Sally.
This is Nicole.
Larry.
This is Bella. Can I share?
Deanna B.
Okay, all I've gotten so far is Paula D, Larry K, Deanna B. Who else, please?
Vasa O.
Vasa O. Anyone else?
This is Bella. Can I share?
And Bella. Okay, we'll start with that. Okay, good morning, Paula D. You're up first.
I am. Good morning, Sandra, and thank you for this opportunity. This is Paula D. in New Hampshire, and I am recovered. And, you know, I'd like to come forth here bringing that last paragraph, just first sentence in, because just to see where he was. He didn't want to bring still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting, what a guy. I mean, really? By foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he had made his livelihood. He would do anything, he said, but that. You know, as we come into here, being intrigued. Now, we know what the word intrigued means. You know, really curious. Like, really? However, he invited his friend to his home. But, you know, I want you to come into this part here. He was getting control of his liquor situation. Now, there he is. You know, those cloudless days. Oh, beautiful days just going along. And then he went on a roaring bender. For him, this was a spree that ended all spree. You know, a price has to be paid, and that's what page 14 says. Simple but not easy. So you saw the simplicity. It's not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant, and here we have it, destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. Being mindful of the time, I'm just going to turn that page. What happens here? A spree? But look at what it says here. For him, this was the spree that ended all sprees, and it was. He saw that he would have to face his problems squarely. Well, that's it. I never faced my problems squarely. I mean, I'd look around at them. I kind of give them a glimpse. Look, no. Right in the eye, that God might give him mastery. It could not be attained, no matter what he did. It didn't matter what he did. And it seemed like our friend Dr. Bob was a good man. I'd like to come alongside him. But even more was needed. It wasn't, oh, I'd like to. It wasn't wishes. Oh, if wishes were horses, wouldn't we all ride, my friend? More than that. So I want to end on that note. Oh, looked at his problem squarely, that God might give him mastery. Thank you for allowing me to share. With that, I do pass, eagerly awaiting to hear the next.
Thank you, Paula D. Larry K.
Santa, thanks so much. Larry K., recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. You know, I like here where it talks about, you know, he saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. And, you know, it's interesting to me because his wife, Ann Smith, kept a journal from 1933 to 1939 where, you know, she was outlining, you know, some of the principles that they had been learning in the Oxford group movement that influenced our movement, our the AA fellowship. And one of the primary ones was a life change. You know, the result in which the individual through a spiritual experience becomes God-centered instead of self-centered. And then, you know, is given mastery, you know, and I think, you know, ultimately that's what happened to Dr. Bob. But, you know, I can relate to coming into to OA and feeling like, you know, I learned just a little bit and I thought I was getting control of my food situation. I learned, you know, just a little bit. I was excited about this, you know, this process of change. And I was, you know, and I had a food plan, which was much like a diet. And, you know, before you knew it, my self-will entered into the picture there. And I also went on a spree, you know, perhaps to end all sprees. And, you know, sometimes this is what the process is like for us is we, you know, we're, you know, before we go through this process of moving from, you know, this 12-step process, which gives us freedom, it's available to anyone. You know, we have to understand that, you know, we're moving from a self-centered existence to a God-centered existence. And this ensures this God consciousness, this daily reprieve that we get. And, you know, for me, coming into the program, you know, I didn't understand what I was up against. I didn't understand what the process was, but I mean, I had a pretty good memory. I was reasonably intelligent, but I didn't understand yet. And it took the disease to batter me good, you know, as it did Dr. Bob. And in so doing, that was the catalyst, you know, that was the leverage that was needed, you know, to move through this process entirely through it, you know, each step in succession. And then God grants us mastery. We don't give that to ourselves, but we get that from our higher power. So grateful. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. Deanna B.
Thank you, Santa. This is Deanna B. from Chicago. Grateful, recovered, compulsive reader. This really hit me in when they were saying, for him, this was the spree that ended all sprees. Now, I don't know when I came back into the program if this was the biggest one, but it was the one that caught my attention, because for one of the many, many times I had been on a quote-unquote diet, Weight Watchers, I had lost most of my weight, I was doing water aerobics, I felt great, bought new clothes, and what happened? I stopped because it was a diet. I had gotten close to my goal weight, and it was a diet, and I started gaining the weight and couldn't stop. And I came into OA desperate. I had that gift of desperation. I don't know if I ever had that. I was willing to write my food down. I was willing to call it in. I was willing to start working at that time it was the workbook. And, you know, God graced me with someone who introduced me to a vision. And although I did get abstinent before, and through the grace of God and the fellowship of the program, I've been abstinent since February. It'll be 2 years in February. That's a miracle for me. And was this the spree that ended all sprees? I sure hope so. And I don't know if it has to be a big one. It just has to get my attention. And that it says here that he saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. And with that, I thank you so much, and I will pass.
Thank you, Deanna B. Vasca O.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Santa, for your service. And I am Vasa, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, calling from Massachusetts. And as I shared many times, I had the gift of desperation when I came to the program, which I didn't see it as a gift. I saw it as a torture. How am I going to live the rest of my life with giving up certain foods? I didn't understand I had the disease. I didn't understand anything about the allergy. I just knew that I could not stop eating, and I had given into the food by then, you know. So my last spree was when I surrendered and I put the food in God's hands, and I just surrendered to the program, and I said, do I want to live or do I want to die, or take the suggestions and the solution, the way it's laid out in the big book. I really didn't think I made my family's lives miserable. You know, I tried to be nice, you know, I tried to do this and that, but they saw the misery in my face, you know. I thought about the food all the time. I did it. I could not stop it, and I needed to find a power greater than myself, and that's the only way I could. It's by the grace of God and the help that I get here and the help that I got from my first sponsor, and I've had other people that, you know, God put in my life, but that was the beginning. That was the really beginning for me, just to surrender, and it's by the grace of God. That was my last spree. You know, it has been 29 years, and I don't take any credit for it. And God is doing for me that I couldn't do for myself. And it started with my abstinence and then just working the rest of the steps one by one. But I did do the first three steps. I can, he can, I will let him. And I will let you people help me too. And that's what I did. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Vasa O. Bella G.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bella G, and I am a thankful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Santa, for doing this service, and thank you very much, everybody on the line. That God might give him mastery. Wow, such a wonderful sentence. And yes, this is, you know, it's for me a reminder, step one, to accept and admit that I am powerless. And yes, I am powerless of my eating. I am powerless of other people's behavior. And I have only one power, to do the right choice one day at a time. And yes, thank you, God, that I am choosing to be connected to God, to be connected to an acceptance and loving power. And I know when I am connected to God, then I know that I am safe and secure. But thank you, God, that I have the 12 steps, and there is to live in 10, 11, and 12. And yes, I am human, and sometimes I do forget that to choose to be connected to God, not in the food areas, but in other behaviors. And thank you, God, that I learned to pause. And I know when I am in trouble, it means that I choose to be connected to my ego, to be connected to myself. And then when I want the control, and I have the step 10 to, you know, to accept and to know, to accept that I didn't do the right choice, and I have a new opportunity to do a better choice. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I know when I choose to be connected to God, then I know that God might give me the mastery. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Bella G, and thank you to everyone for staying within the 3 minutes. We're on page 155, the third paragraph. Who would also like to share on what was read before we move on to the next paragraph?
Sally. Sally?
Amy E.
Sally A.
Melissa C.
Reva P.
Amy E.
Amy E. Melissa C.
Reva P.
Reva P. Okay, I have Sally A, Amy E, Melissa C, Reba P. Sally A, you're up.
Thank you, and good morning, Santa. And good morning, A Vision for You. It's Sally A in South Jersey, a recovered compulsive overeater. So he tells us here, being intrigued, maybe even skeptical, but certainly intrigued, curious. However, he invited our friend to his home. Some time later, and just as he thought, and there's the key word for me in this whole paragraph, he's still thinking, and that is probably a big mistake, that he is still thinking, because our thinking is sick. We've heard it said, we don't have an eating problem, we have a thinking problem. And here he is, he's thinking, he thought he was getting control. He thought he was. It reminds me of page 30, this page that talks about getting in control. This third paragraph, it tells us, we alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt, and that's what we see happening for Dr. Bob here, all of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That word demoralization means unmanageability. And that's exactly what happens to him here. Just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. How many times did I go on another diet? How many times did I think, okay, this is not so bad, I can do this? And then I just ended up unraveling and ending up in these horrible black holes of binging out of control. He went on a roaring bender. For him, this was the spree that ended all sprees. He saw that he would have to face, perhaps turn, his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. Something had to change. And that's the interesting thing about when we think we've got it all under control. We're not really generally willing to change when we think it's all under control. It's said only in an environment of acceptance can people change. And this man, fortunately, was surrounded by people who loved him, who accepted him as he was, and he could finally listen and learn and change. Thanks for letting me share with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sally A. Amy E.
Good morning. This is Amy E. from rural Ohio. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you so much. He would have to face his problems squarely. When I read this, I think not just the food, but our life problems. For him, this meant going around to his patients, people he had perhaps treated while drunk, operated on while drunk. In fact, it was he had to perform an operation after this spree. He was still jittery, and Bill gave him 3 bottles of beer. That was his last drink to steady his nerves, 3 bottles of beer so that he could perform this procedure with a minimum of trembling hands. When we're talking about working this program of recovery, it is not just working our abstinence. It is about getting straight with our Creator and getting straight with the people around us. And so facing our problems squarely means making amends to that brother you haven't talked to in 5 years. It means releasing, forgiving, releasing people who've abused you in the past. It means repaying debts. It means going to friends and repairing the wreckage of gossip and infidelity. It means facing your problem squarely, not just the problem in your pantry, but the problem in my life. I have to face these problems squarely. It means I have to stop using anger. I have to stop using self-pity, all the character defects that keep me cocooned, that I've been relishing too much, along with my cake. The food is just a symptom. This is a program of recovery helping me to drill down to causes and conditions and living in a new spiritual fourth dimension of reality. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Amy E. Melissa C.
Hi, good morning. This is Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater from New York. I'm so grateful to be able to listen this morning. I was away for the last week, and I really didn't have much of a cell signal, and I miss this meeting tremendously. And just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. I was intrigued, just like Dr. Bob was. I started, initially hearing things that made sense to me. I knew I had a problem. I heard about my powerlessness, and that made sense, but I wasn't exactly sure that the solution laid out in front of me was applicable to me. I was the exception. I was more interested in picking and choosing the parts of this program that I wanted to use. I heard, take what you want and leave the rest, and I interpreted that incorrectly for me. I thought I could get a food plan, find a fellowship, and then do the steps that I wanted to do when I wanted to do them in the order that I wanted to do them. And that brought me only so far. That did my initial 5 years ago when I came back to OA, that actually gave me the ability to put down the sugar, And so that brought me to where I feel like Dr. Bob was here, thinking that I had control over my food situation. And that was the big problem. Believing that I had control, I began to act as if I had control. So I could let go of writing. I could let go of committing my food over weekends, it started, over a vacation. I stopped reaching out to my fellows unless I wanted to. And this brought me to my last bender, which for me was a crazy binge on what was in the house. And what was in the house was cereal and crackers and nuts. And I ate these things until my stomach was so bloated that I was in agony. I thought maybe I had a tumor. And it brought me to paranoia and fear. And that's for me when I finally became willing to do whatever was laid out here in this book. You know, and it says, I have two choices. I can follow these steps completely, not choosing what I want, you know, because what I want got me here. Or I can go back to the food until the bitter end. And, you know, and so it was when I became willing to follow it completely, you know, make those amends, take out those things that I didn't really want to look at, and finally look at them and right my wrongs. And that's what has given me relief from the food. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa C. And Reva P., you will be our last share on this paragraph before moving on to the next paragraph.
Okay. Good morning. This is Reva P., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto. For this paragraph, two things struck me. First of all, I remember when, and also for today, whenever I think I am getting control over anything, and it used to be about the food, but it could be anything, work, my kids, my finances. Just when I think I've got it under control, when I get that feeling that I'm rolling up my sleeves and I'm taking charge, I now know it's going to be a mess because I cannot control the food and I can't control really anything else in my life. The second thing that struck me is that he saw that he'd have to face his problems. You know, the food, what it did for me when it was working initially, I didn't have to look. I didn't look at myself in the mirror. I think a lot of people share, and I relate to the fact that I only looked at myself from the neck up because I didn't want to see. I didn't want to see problems, and the food kept me in a perpetual fog, numbed out state. I couldn't see a thing. It was total fog. Couldn't see where I was going, what was happening. And I love the fact that he says he would have to. Not that he needed to, not that he wanted to, not that he thought maybe it's a good idea to face my problem. I have to, which reminds me what has already been shared, that I only have two choices. I either face my issues, be it food or all the things underneath the iceberg that is what drove me to do what I did with food, or go back to where I was, and it's a progressive disease. It will just get worse. So I face my problem squarely by taking the steps 4 to 9 initially, and then 10, 11, 12, mainly 10 on a daily basis. And then again, it reminds me, just because I'm facing my problem squarely doesn't mean like, okay, now I fix them. No, no, no. That God might give me mastery, and mastery is almost the opposite of what I was thinking was control. But I don't do it. I do the footwork, and then God does it for me, as has been shared so many times on this meeting. And for that, I'm grateful, and I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Reva P. Chelsea H.
Thank you for your service, Santa. Good morning. I'm Chelsea H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater for today. One morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared what his trouble had been. He found himself surprisingly well received and learned that many knew of his drinking. Stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he had hurt. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly to a person in his line of business. And this information in the text here, the taking the bull by the horns, that idiom expression means to face it head on. And that is what he had just said in the earlier paragraph. He had to face it squarely so that the source greater than himself might give him mastery. And one morning for myself, after walking through this process and working with my big book guide, I had to take the bull by the horns and go and start out on my ninth-step amends. And it was an interesting and so freeing time for me. And many of you have heard me say before, I call them freedom junkets, my step nines. And I secured permission to go, and I actually booked a hotel in New York because I had to make the rounds. And I made appointments with several people. And it was... I was well received, and it was surprising. I had to make an amends to my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my stepdaughters, and I got to have such an experience with them. I was trembling when I went too, but I was more eager to recover than I was to stand in fear, because something I just heard recently, fear is activates my character defects, and part of it has to do with me going into isolation and not doing anything. So I was able to grab hold of that with my guide. We walked through what it might look like, so I wasn't going without preparation, and I got to make some of the most beautiful amends, and each one I made, I felt freer and freer and freer. And I took the bull by the horns to actually do the work, because I had been tiptoeing around this work for many, many years in these rooms with King Food as my master, like what they talk about in Bill's story on page 8. Alcohol was my master. Food was my master, and so was alcohol. So I had to humble myself to my creator, whatever's at the totality of it all, and I got the next right thing, got in my car, literally, and I went about taking it squarely head on, and whatever the outcome would be, I would live in it, because I would know that my guide of destiny has me exactly where I need to be in that amends process. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Chelsea H. And who else would like to comment on what was read? Page 1, on page 156, paragraph 1. Charles H. Rakesa Z. Anyone else?
Nicole S.
Nicole S. Okay, I have Charles H. Rakesa Z. Nicole S. Anyone else?
Penny C.
Okay, Charles, you are up next.
Thank you, my spiritual sister, Santa. Thank you for your service. And, you know, I'm sorry for stepping on you, but, you know, I got to step on this disease, man. You know, sometimes when you hear certain, you know, I wanted to take a stab at that last paragraph, right? But I'm going to take a couple of jokes at this one. So, you know, that same shovel, right? It said, God will move the mountain if I bring a shovel. That shovel I used to binge with, I used to dig my hole with, I take that same shovel, the same one, yep, down to the same one, and I beat the crap out of the enemy every single day. He like, yo, Charles, what up? Good morning, I'm waking you up. Hey, go your, what's up? What you going to do today? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep my nose in that big book, right? And taking a bull by the horns. Yeah, I'm ready for that, man. I'm ready. I want to read something. You know, thank you, Dr. Bob, right? I want to, you know, this is rare. I went to, like, my big book is so, they say if your big book is tall, maybe your life isn't. But, you know, it was so important. I beat the crap out of my big book because I'm opening, I'm reading it with different people. And, like, I lost my forwards, man. And that forward to the second edition is serious when it says the physician. I believe they're talking about Mr. Dr. Bob. Yo, big him up, right? You know, he tried a whole bunch of, in the fourth and second edition, I'm paraphrasing, he tried so much spiritual ways. But then what got me hyped this morning is when I read it, and y'all was talking about him in the vision for you, that he mustered up a willingness that he could have never did before. And it was 1950, you know, he lived to 1950, and he never had a drink again. That got me, I don't know if that got y'all excited all over the world, all over the country. That got me hyped up, man. I ain't never got a binge again. And that same shovel that I was digging my grave with, I take it and beat the crap out of the enemy this morning. I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles H. Rakesit Z.
Thank you, Santa. This is Rakesit Z, recovered compulsive overeater in California. And we read in the previous paragraph that he had to face his problems head on. And I didn't want to face my problems. I still don't want to, actually. But that's what I ate. That's exactly why I ate. I wanted everything to go away, everybody to go away. I didn't want to have to think about everything. I wanted to be anesthetized in some kind of trance that I would just get through the day and not feel anything. But this didn't work. When my mom came over, I couldn't stand my mom. I couldn't stand her. And as soon as she walked in the door, I would start binging. I would start binging the minute she walked in the door. and I wouldn't stop for days. And, you know, I had to take the bull by the horns. I had to ask myself, why is your mother upsetting you so much? That's what I had to do. Why am I eating over this? Why is my mother upsetting me so much? What is it? I can't just make it go away with food because it wasn't working. It wasn't working. I was still feeling really bad, even though I was eating and binging my way through an unpleasant visit that I consider unpleasant. And the same thing at work. I would get a serious problem to solve. My manager would give me a problem, and I'd start panicking. I don't know if I can do this. I don't think I can do it. I don't think I'm smart enough to do this. You know what? I'd say to myself, okay, I have to go to the vending machine. I have to calm my nerves. Let me get, 12 items from the vending machine so I can start working on this problem, just so I can even start looking at it so my nerves will be calm. And that's exactly, I didn't want to face it. Everybody go away, please. Everything go away, please. And it didn't work. It was so painful. It was so painful. And it was painful to look at these things, too. Why am I eating over my mom? It was painful to go through the fourth step and see my part in it, that I had a part in it, that I couldn't stand my mom. And, you know, the surgery was painful. The surgery was painful, but after the surgery, I felt so much better. I feel so good today after the surgery. And, you know, I still have to do this daily. Look at what's bothering me. Am I thinking about food? And most of the time I'll say, wow, I'm not thinking about food, even though I have that problem. And it's really great. So thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Rakesha Z. Nicole S.
Hi, this is Nicole S. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Colorado, and I love this paragraph, how it talks about taking the bull by the horns. And I felt for so many years, I first of all never knew how to deal with my problems. I had always done something, to get away from having to actually deal with my problems. And I would, you know, my first thing whenever I had a problem is I would just reach for the food, and then I never learned how to deal with them. And so when I first took the steps, just having to deal with problems and things in my life that were uncovered, and that the food was no longer masking, and I just sat there with my problems and had to just deal with them squarely. And I realized that the quickest way through life and through anything that comes along is to go straight through it. And I realized that I had just been like a bumblebee, just going around in circles and never getting to the destination. And I realized that the quickest way through is to just go straight through and take that bull by the horns and deal with my problems. And when it says, you know, he found himself surprisingly well-received, and I felt the same way. And I had... my husband was one on my list who I just had, a lot of amends to make to. And it was funny. I had for so many years just hidden my eating disorder from him, and I would, eat some of his food, and then I would run to the store and buy some more and replace it, and then so it didn't look like I had bought more of it. I'd have to eat that down, and just that insanity of always trying to hide it so well. And I did a pretty good job of that. And when I finally was honest with him, he was a little shocked, but then it started, adding up. And just like, it said here that many already knew about his drinking. And my husband was saying, oh, that makes sense. I was wondering why that was gone and thought I just ate it, but things started to make sense to him. And just having, to be honest with, all these people in my life, with my parents and my sister and friends, and it was really, really tough. And I felt, though, that the more I really just took that bull by the horns and faced my fears and faced those people and made amends to them, that each one just brought more and more healing. And even though it was hard and painful, it really was the quickest and the best and the most healing way through my problems. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Nicole S. Penny C.
Good morning. This is Penny C., recovered in Massachusetts. I'm reading this paragraph every time I come across it. It begs, in my experience anyway, this paragraph begs for some caution. And, yeah, Dr. Bob went out, just got up one morning and decided he was going to go and make amends to all the people he had hurt. And we don't I'm reading between the lines here. You know, did he get some guidance before he did that? And my caution to people that are approaching the ninth step is that it's so important that we not rush into this too fast. You know, the experience I've had over the years is that folks are so anxious to get over that ninth step. And in our case now, you know, to be able to call ourselves recovered, that they're ready to rush into situations that may not be right for them. And just recently I had that experience where a sponsee is on the ninth step and she so wants to be done. And, you know, she was ready. And thank God I had cautioned her that she needed to speak to a recovered person, you know, hopefully me, her guide, before she did this. Because she was ready to bring up things that the people she was going to make amends to didn't even know about. So that's just a word of caution from someone who's had some experience with this myself, ready to make amends, and thank God I had a guide who warned me. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny C. We have time for one more share before ending this meeting.
This is Katie G. from Boston.
Katie G., good morning.
Good morning, Santa. Good morning, everyone. This is Katie G., recovered sweet addict, one day at a time. And living in the step today, thank you, God. What a miracle it is to be abstinent and sober on a Monday morning. Yeah, I guess I just want to echo the previous speaker. I had initially 140 amends to make, and I guess I just want to be the voice of not being in the outcomes business and remembering that this is not Feel Good Anonymous, right? Like, this is about taking ownership, taking responsibility for who I am and who I have been. And the most painful amends that I had to make was actually with my mother, and it took me 4 years. It took me 4 years of I made three attempts, and then I let it go, and for a very long time, just praying. Because you know what, guys? She wasn't ready. And this isn't about me feeling better. This is about, like, if she's not ready for me, then I can't, there's nothing that I can do. I can't force her because I want to be recovered today. And guys, what does recovered mean? It means, okay, so now I've gone and made 140 amends. I haven't had to make an amend since I finished them. And that's not true, right? It's about living in 10, 11, and 12. It's about going back to step one for a much needed new experience in the steps when I need to. And it's about my commitment to my physical allergy and my obsession of the mind and living my life with patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. So, you know, not all my amends were pretty. I had a lot of wonderful moments. And I think what the most amazing part of it was is that amends allow me to sink into my own skin, right? Because I'm a perfectionistic person and I want to be perfect all the time. But by living honestly each day, I can be comfortable in my skin because I'm not afraid of looking someone in the eye and saying, I was wrong. And the, you know, end of the story with my mom was we had another huge fight, and finally, ultimately, I was able to really hear her, and I was able to really hear the exact nature of my wrongs and make a true and deep amend to her. And it hasn't been like, you know, Susie Sunshine ever since, but it's been so much better. And thank you, God, for the program of Overeaters Anonymous, that I do not have to live in shame and that I can live in recovery one day at a time based on my willingness to move forward with action. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G., and thank you to everyone who has shared. Please join us for the second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164. followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Penny C., please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you, Santa. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.